Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I am Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And this is episode 3, 2009. Make sure to follow us at T Swift Podcast. I don't think you should wait. I think you should subscribe now and follow if you're listening on Spotify. So, this is going to be a hard year for us because Taylor did so much.
I'm really wondering how long it's going to take us to get through it all.
Our podcasts are usually pretty long anyway.
Yeah, so get ready, buckle up.
We also have to say thank you for the reception to our last podcast. It's been very good.
Yeah, it's been way better than I thought it would be. I thought that nobody was going to listen to us for like at least a month.
We were on the
Please
charts.
listen to the podcast. Yeah, we're on the charts. We're charting, everybody.
And we're successful legends. And
Yep.
also, I forgot to share this with you. We hit 1,000 streams on Spotify.
Yay!
Thank you, Taylor Swift, for giving us something to talk about. We literally would not be here without her. We start 2009, actually in 2008, with New Year's Eve, Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve. Taylor gives us her first New Year's Eve performance, and she performs Picture to Burn for an unknown reason.
That was the thing that it was like the opener, too. She opened her set with Picture to Burn. I was like, who?
This is the first thing you want people to hear when you have Love Story in your repertoire now.
Right? It doesn't make any sense.
And she does forever and always.
The fact that she did Forever and Always is like one thing. Like, she got away with that because, yeah, it was on the album. But the fact that she coupled it with Picture to Burn and probably only did Love Story because they were like, Taylor, play a single. She was roasting a particular person, and we know who it was because he was there.
Yes, Joe Jonas was in attendance. Forever and Always is most certainly about him.
It, to me, it was like one thing for him to like be there in the crowd, but she had to stand there on like the little platform with who was it? Fucking Ryan Seacrest and Demi Lovato and
Oh
like a
my
couple
God.
other random people and stand there with Joe 5 feet away from her, not looking at each other, not acknowledging each other's presence, talking to a camera in a microphone.
True
Yeah,
teenagers.
it was great. Like the picture, if you watch the GIF and stuff and like look at the picture, it's one of the most uncomfortable things I've ever seen in my life. I would have stabbed myself before I would have done that. Professionalism, or maybe not even professionalism. Maybe she just wanted to show up and be like, I'm fine. I'm great. You know what I mean?
Taylor is very spiteful at this time in her
She is.
life. She
Yeah.
is. She's out for blood and she knows that she's going to be that girl. So in the process of becoming that girl, I have to say, she takes down a few people in the process.
Oh, yeah, she'll take down anybody.
Another interesting thing is that Demi Lovato makes an appearance and they have a turbulent relationship, to say the least, but it is not turbulent in the sense that they go back and forth. It's just Demi.
My God.
So Taylor is with her good friends, Joe Jonas and Demi Lovato, who actually themselves are pretty good friends. Oh, wait, they dated. They all
They did.
dated.
Yeah, they did date it. And then they broke up. And Demi, there's a specific memory that I have where Demi Lovato, somebody asked her to sign a magazine cover that she did with Joe, and she signed over his face after they broke up. It was a
Wow.
turbulent breakup. It was quite
Taylor
turbulent.
T.
I feel like they kind of have, like, in a way, a similar personality, and that's kind of why I feel like they like Demi like hates her so much, is because like she kind of like sees her like vindictiveness like reflected back at her, and she's like, oh, fuck you.
So January is a not much of a busy month for her, but she goes on SNL for the first time in the beginning of January and she performs Love Story and Forever and Always.
I don't remember it at fucking all. I do not remember that happening.
I remember the Forever and Always performance. I think she played the guitar.
Oh, maybe I do remember that.
Throughout this year, Taylor really has a habit of plugging songs that are not singles.
So there was Forever and Always, which there's a bunch of reasons for that, but she also did
You're Not Sorry, a lot.
You're Not Sorry, which I never understood. I mean, I guess it was remixed, for CSI or whatever, but like at the same time, it's like, but where's the video though? Like, where's the promo? She's just playing whatever she fucking wants, which was cool for me at the time.
She kind of goes rogue this year and performs whatever she wants from Fearless whenever she wants, which in hindsight maybe is a wind up for award show season, like trying to get people to listen to the whole album rather than just like the select singles, because the songs that she chooses to play are usually more of the songwritery type songs as opposed to like the hooky songs like Love Story. And she does the more like serious girl songs, Forever and Always and You're Not Sorry. So also in January, she launches her dress line with Walmart.
I have absolutely no commentary except for that one of my friends bought one and like I couldn't find it. Whenever I go to Walmart, I was like, I cannot find this fucking collection that she supposedly has. And so I like was at my friend's house, and she was just like, oh, I got a sundress out of the Taylor Swift collection. And she like picked it up and showed it to me. And I was like, oh, my God, that is the worst thing I have ever seen in my life.
Was it bad?
It was literally like, yeah, it was awful. So it was like knee length, which is whatever, like whatever. Knee length is fine. I personally like it a little bit shorter, but whatever. I just think knee length is a bad fucking look. Unless
Taylor was virginal at this time.
Yeah. And she has there's like brown and white, which already were off to a terrible start. And it had like stripes. It had like lace and stripes. Whoa. It was awful. You know, the one thing that I did take was I was like, can I have the tag that says Taylor Swift on it? And she was like, yeah, okay.
She's like, it's like a dusty rat. Here you go. Here's the tag. Yeah. It's $5 dress. I don't think she promotes it much, but it exists and it happened. On the 29th of January, she announces her first headlining tour, the Fearless Tour.
The queen, the icon.
Oh, she changed things. She altered the way that the girls were going to perform for the rest of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It served us. I mean, we'll get into it when it starts, but, you know, it served us.
The set was, I mean, honestly, in my opinion, and Speak Now is my favorite tour for a lot of reasons, but, I mean, that was the best set. Okay, let's not get into it. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah, we'll get into it, but she was that girl, let's say.
Yep, let's just leave it at that.
It started with 54 cities in 39 states, and she picked Kelly Pickler and Gloriana as her opening acts.
Which made sense at the time.
At the time, she was like best friends with Kelly Pickler.
Which is funny now in hindsight, because when was the last time Taylor said the name Kelly Pickler?
Also,
2013, maybe.
This is one of the rare instances where Taylor's like promotional push did not help someone secure a career. Kelly Pickler didn't go off and do that, you know?
Well, yeah, there's Kelly Pickler, which is, you know, one thing, because she was already like having a bit of a career. It's like never really took off. But then if you look at Gloriana, that's the real flop. They disbanded after this tour. Yeah, they're not even a band anymore.
I could tell you one of their songs. Are they Christian?
No, they were just like, I remember one. I can't remember the title. Oh, Wild at Heart. That's the song. That rebel moon is shining. They were a country band, RIP. I remember after my Fearless Tour show, Katie was like, oh, the person I went with, she was like, oh, Gloriana is going to be meeting people at this gate, like totally free. You want to go? And I was just like,
nope.
let's just go get a t-shirt.
Let's go home. I want McDonald's and I want to go to sleep. So also this year we get a lot of vlog activity. Taylor really learns how to use iMovie and uses it.
Oh, she does. She goes off. I don't know if she was bored or what have you, but she was making movies.
She was an influencer before influencers were a thing.
She was, legitimately. And I ask myself every day, where is the Oscar?
Where is the Oscar? She did some great acting. She promoted her bandmates. There was some tea.
Yeah, there was some tea.
The Joe Jonas tea. And then there was some like boring stuff about like her retainer, stuff that I don't care about now. But in hindsight,
I loved it.
It was like very much what 13-year-old or like 12-year-old Mimi want to see from my favorite celebrity. She felt very accessible, which at the time, I don't think stress how far away celebrities felt from you, how removed they were, because social media was not like a huge thing back then. And Taylor was kind of a pioneer, I would say, in terms of using social media as a way to connect to her fans and trick us into feeling that she was just like us.
Well, I mean, starting with MySpace, and then she got Twitter, and then she had the vlogs. And it's like the way that the vlogs were set up was not, sometimes was about like the music and touring and doing this, but most of the time, she always tried to have it be about like her doing normal ass fucking thing. Just being normal.
Which it was like her going to a store or like her getting on a plane, like doing something quite low key, not like paparazzi flexing. It was really just like, look at me. You can relate to me.
And it worked. I thought that she was, I thought that she was like the most relatable person on the face of the planet. Like at this, at 2009 Fearless era, I was like, there's nobody that I, there's no celebrity that I know of that is more relatable than Taylor Swift.
Period. And also she didn't feel like a superstar yet. She was kind of like a little, not a secret, but something that you kind of had to be in the know to know about. Like people weren't talking about her vlogs and posting them everywhere. The vlogs really were for like her and the fans. I don't think it went through management. There was no external voice telling her what I feel she could and couldn't put in. It was really like from her to us.
When I was writing this down in the notes, I did not think that we were going to talk about it for this long, but I'm shook. I guess that's right. You're totally right.
And people really want them to come back.
I can't even imagine her doing that now.
Taylor is too jaded to let us in like that again.
If she were to make a video like that today, she knows goddamn good and well there would be people making URLs that said, Retainer Swift 13. I love my retainer, Taylor. I have a retainer too, Taylor. Let's talk about our retainers, Taylor. Taylor, talk more about your retainer. It's just like, oh my God. Look at what happened with Pop-Tarts.
In February, we get her first Grammy serve, I suppose.
You're talking about the look?
Yeah, the look.
Or just, yeah, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't like, oh my God, she's gorgeous tonight. But I mean, when you compare it to the thing, the bird that she put on her fucking body, the last Grammys, and then we go to the, it's just like a beautiful black gown. She has a little updo. Her makeup is very, it's very gentle. It's very light.
Classic.
She looks very pretty.
She was told by someone that she needed to calm down for the Grammys.
And she said, okay, time to pull out that little black dress.
She literally said, okay, and that little black dress, Madeline.
Yes. Oh, shit. I didn't even think about that when I said it. Yes.
Wow.
To be that person once more. Yep.
So we get a performance from Taylor.
This is one of my least favorite performances. Let me just preface this by saying I fucking hate this performance. Continue.
It's awful. It really is. So Taylor gets teamed up with the one and only Miley Cyrus. And keep in mind, this is not the Miley Cyrus that we know now.
No.
She was Hannah Montana, just breaking out of it, kind of, actually, you know what? A very precocious young girl. She'd been famous for so long, and I don't know, she really thought that she was that bitch. And I guess at the time, to all the 12-year-olds, she was, including me. I loved Miley Cyrus too, though. I don't know who I'm dragging myself. And the Grammys loves to put together acts that you wouldn't necessarily pair, and sometimes it worked. And this didn't work. Taylor sang Miley. Their voices just should never be on the same track.
Everything about it was shockingly bad. It was almost unlistenable. I was like watching it like, oh my God.
It was embarrassing.
I my mother was in the room with me watching this and I almost shielded my face. I was like, this is that bad that I am humiliated. Yeah, it was embarrassing for me. God only knows what she would think if she sat down and watched this today.
I think she'd have something to say about it. Funniest part about this whole performance is that Taylor and Miley have never been friends. They don't like each other. They are not friends. They don't hang out unless it's work related. And you can see in the promo videos for this, there's an interview with the two of them together. And there is a behind the scenes video on Miley World, which I don't think Taylor knew was being taken. So
Miley World.
But this video exists. And it's like a 6-minute video of Miley Cyrus irritating Taylor Swift. It really is.
It is bad. Unbelievable. If you haven't watched it, you need to find it. Everybody, it is, it's like secondhand embarrassment to a T because you can tell how much Taylor wants to fucking kill her.
Yeah, she really does. They clearly don't gel. I don't think they knew each other before this performance happened. Oh, and they sang 15. I think we forgot to mention that. She was like 16, but I remember in the promo video, she was like, this song just means so much to me because I was 15. And you can see Taylor looking at her being like, me too, bitch. I wrote it.
So everybody the fuck else too, Miley. Anyway, I think you're right that Miley and Taylor don't necessarily love each other, but it's funny. I don't think they hate each other either, because we would know by now if they fucking hated each other, because Miley has a hard time keeping her mouth shut about stuff like that.
She's taking shots at Taylor. When Taylor was getting all that criticism about the girl squad, Nelly definitely put her two cents
in. That's right. Okay, okay, mm-hmm. You're reminding me.
It's not like her and Demi, where Demi is just like lunging at Taylor all the time. So Taylor was nominated for Best Pop Vocal Female Performance for You Belong With Me, and she loses to
Single Ladies,
which I think is very interesting.
Ladies, there is a dark foreshadowing occurring here. The storm is brewing. The clouds are appearing at this time.
Yes. And to be fair, should Beyonce always win Best Pop Vocal over Taylor? Probably.
Yeah, if we're talking about, if we're going to say pop vocal, I mean,
Beyonce wins. Hello. The most interesting parts of Taylor's career, because her narrative is so tightly controlled, are the profiles that we get from her. And we don't get that access very often. So we get a profile with Rolling Stone. Madeline, do you have any overall thoughts on this article before I get into some specific quotes?
Yeah, so my biggest overall thought was I remembered reading it back then. Like, I remembered the title because it struck me as being, you know, like a 15-year-old girl at the time. I was just like, wow, the very pink, very perfect life of Taylor Swift. Wow, wow, wow. I want my life to be like that, you know. And second of all, reading it again as being 25 and sort of like seeing how she is now and like going back to like 1989 even going back to Red, it's just like this person that they're describing, this person who is hyper focused on little tiny details and is a complete goody two shoes, doesn't drink, I've never had a cigarette, I don't do things like that, and will openly say things like that like it's a good thing. Not that
it's
not
preachy
that,
preachy about these
right
things.
like this is the way that I am, and this is the message that I send out to young girls, that this is blah blah blah. And reading it back then, I thought, like, wow, she's such a good role model, like, blah, 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 which had the exact effect. That's what they wanted. Yeah. And then, like, looking at it now, it's like reading it, it's just like, this was totally put upon. Like, yes, I believe that she was an average person who did not do drugs. But do I think that she never in her life had a sip of alcohol? I do not believe that at the time. I do not believe that she was this perfect person living in her happy pink house, having the best time ever. It was so weird to read it. That's my overall thought, is that it was fucking weird.
At this time, so weird. Her reality was so constructed. She hadn't reached that superstar level yet. So there weren't many voices in the echo chamber of what Taylor was saying about herself. And I suppose what was being fed to her to say. We also need to remember the time that this came about. So this was really post TMZ coverage of Britney Spears having a breakdown, all of these celebrities like crashing their cars, and Parents of America coming out and saying, these people are bad influences. And Taylor's career kind of comes at a perfect moment where she gets to be the goody two shoes of America.
I never really thought about like how it juxtaposed alongside people like Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears and Taylor Momsen at the time, who was a big deal. Even Miley Cyrus coming, like in the coming couple of years, Taylor Swift constantly being like, this is what a good woman looks like, and every other celebrity woman is what a bad woman looks like, which was not her fault. She didn't know that that's what she was doing. She just thought that she was, you know, like, oh, well, I don't really smoke or drink or anything, so I guess I can like be a really good role model for people. She didn't mean to make other women look like shit. It's just that the media played her that way, and so that was the way she came across as being like, I'm virginal and better than you, because that's what they said about her.
Yeah, and I think that media also kind of parroted that back to her. A lot of the questions and interviews from around this time are, how does it feel being like such a good role model to young women? And
have you ever smoked a cigarette, Taylor? Have you ever had any weed, Taylor?
And she's like, no, well, what's that? I've never heard of it.
No, I would never do that. No. Like, okay.
So we can get into some specific quotes. So we get a mysterious figure in the life of Taylor Swift is Scott Swift, her father. Andrea is very involved in her career and is spoken about very frequently, but Scott is kind of Taylor doesn't pretend like he doesn't exist, but she doesn't really share any details with us about him. So here's a quote from what the author observed as a conversation. It takes superhuman strength for a teenager to listen to her father talk at length about her personal life. And even Swift, the goodiest goody-goody in the nation, struggles to remain polite. Her dad runs on about the tour bus on which she travels with her mom. "We call it the Estrogen Express," he says. "That's not what we call it," counters Swift. Then her dad talks about the treadmill he got for her because she didn't want to deal with signing autographs at the gym. "That's not why," yelps Swift. "I just don't want to look nasty and sweaty when people are taking pictures of me."
Here's what I will say. As a person with a dad, as a person who was once a 16-year-old girl with a dad, like, my dad thinks that he is so fucking funny. You are not always that funny, Dad. And I think that Scott's whole thing, like, his whole life is, like, he just, like, shows up in Taylor's life. Or, you know, not, I mean, he's always been there, but, like, he'll just show up and be like, "Time for me to make my dad jokes now.
She's like,
doing my Rolling Stone interview, Dad."
She's like, "Give out a guitar pick and shut the fuck up."
Yeah. So I don't think that they have, like, a strained relationship. I think that her and her mom are really, really close. And her dad, I think, because they were so wealthy and because he had, you know, that particular job that he had, he wasn't around as much as Andrea perhaps was. She also had a job. But, I mean, he was, like, you know, kind of like a hot shot. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I just think that, like, they're not as close as Andrea and as her and Andrea are.
Yeah, I think also Scott Swift is a little bit of a blemish on the face of the Taylor Swift career because he is a little unfiltered and a Republican, and he shares quite frequently. He openly supports, is he a Trump supporter or is he a Republican?
And it's actually funny because that totally mirrors, like, my life. Like, my mom, like, if I was a celebrity, my mom would be, like, the blemish because she's a fucking Republican. My dad is nonpartisan, I would say. He doesn't really care. I mean, he does care. He has political opinions, but he's not on Facebook.com going,
yeah, not like Scott Swift, who knows that his daughter, he knows his daughter is a superstar celebrity. He knows people are going to see this. So he's trying to make a point. But
exactly. At the same time, I feel like it's so unfair because it's like, yeah, people are going to see that Scott Swift is a fucking Republican and possibly a Trump supporter, I don't know, and be like, oh my God, Taylor's dad, blah, blah, blah. It's like, do none of you people have parents who have differing political opinions from you? Taylor Swift is obviously not a Republican. When I was a teenager, when I was like a young teenager, I thought that I was a Republican because that's what my parents were. But when I grew up, I had my own thoughts, my own opinions, and I wasn't a Republican anymore. It's what happens to so many people. But it's like, when it's a celebrity, it's like, well, she must be the devil. It's like, I don't have time for it. But yeah, you're right. It is a blemish, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's weird. Again, it's just like a break in the perfect Taylor facade, which I just think is interesting. Then we get a beautiful quote from the wonderful Scott Borchetta. He says, "Taylor and I made a very aggressive deal on the back end. I've written her some very big checks."
Jesus fucking Christ. That is a weird quote. That was in the Rolling Stone?
Yeah, that was in
the
article.
He was there?
Yeah, I mean, Scott Borchetta proves himself to be a fucking idiot, which we been knew, but, you know, he proves it here. And then she comment on paparazzi culture. My note is benevolent queen. Her quote is, "You should never judge a person until you know the full story." Also, there's like a small thing about her making fun of a fan for having a New Jersey accent. They call it a sin against a human, the only one that she does during a 10-hour day. I don't think that's valid. That's stupid.
No, that's really, really stupid. Yep, I definitely remember reading it. It was a big deal to me. not to CNN, but boy, was it to me.
Then also in March, she hops over to Australia and performs a pretty disastrous set. I think she was sick during this performance, but it was bad. It was just a
yeah.
performance.
You're talking about when she's wearing the gold dress and
yeah,
she
does the
this
costume.
This is what I was talking about. In the last episode, this is the performance I was talking about when she embarrasses me. But it's like you can't even really roast her because she is sick. But it's crazy to me because she was sick then. There are performances from 1989 where she was fucking sick. And I mean, the difference between like her sick back then trying to sing and her sick now trying to sing is like, wow, she has gotten so much better vocally. It's crazy.
She has definitely had rigorous vocal training. Like, there's a significant difference now from how she used to sing before. And I think that that is not, I don't think that that just came about through touring and she buckled down and took the criticisms of her voice very seriously and worked to change it. So we get this terrible performance. And at this stage in her career, I'm not ready for a festival kind of scenario where not everyone is there to see her in the daytime when they're drunk. It is not, she's not at that level yet. She's still like a little, you know, kind of like a pop princess, country queen. Like the next thing we get is her CSI appearance.
Okay, so when I heard that she was going to be in an episode of CSI, I was like, why not Law and Order? Like, I literally was like, CSI? Ew. Like, I didn't understand why she liked it so much.
Why not Grey's Anatomy? I don't get that. Go on Grey's Anatomy.
Well, probably because she couldn't land the fucking gig. Before we get into this, now that you mentioned Grey's Anatomy, do you remember that there is a version of White Horse that was just for Grey's Anatomy?
Just for Grey's Anatomy.
It played in the background, and it is a better version. And it's here's really why. Because it doesn't have the piano. For some reason, putting the piano into the song, it dulls it somehow. Like, just having the cello, I think it's a cello. Don't quote me on that. And the guitar in this Grey's Anatomy version, it is so much sadder. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, that is the White Horse that my tattoo is from. It was in an episode of Grey's Anatomy. It is not on the Fearless album. It is
nowhere to be found, really.
Nowhere to be found. I have it on my iPod that I don't even use anymore, so I never really listen to it anymore, but I'm going to boot that fucking thing up one of these days. Anyway, back to CSI. So she couldn't get the gig on Grey's Anatomy.
which she would have preferred. She was very obsessed with Grey's Anatomy at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. She would have preferred it. But she was still like a CSI stan, which I never understood. So
the CSI performance, she plays a golf. I'm not kidding.
To see her like that, I thought it was hilarious.
It was like a lip piercing or an eyebrow piercing or both.
It was a lip piercing. But remember, she's like a normal she's like a normal girl, and then like something happens to her, you know, in the 2 years, and she's like all of a sudden she's a goth, and she's like, I have a lip piercing and a bad boy boyfriend.
It's so bad, and she gets killed,
stabbed like in the chest or in the back. The pair of scissors. Oh no, because she's facing up her dead body. Because back then, this is what we made edits of on Tumblr.com.
Yes.
So I've seen a lot of edits of her dead fucking body on CSI. So she got stabbed in the front with a pair of scissors, some shit like that.
And this was interpolated into a lot of, what are they called? AU memes? So it was like alternate universe memes. So it would be like Taylor and Joe get into a fight and Joe murders Taylor.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think I remember people doing stuff like that. Do I remember somebody saying, Joe's going to kill Taylor? When you and I both know that it would be the other fucking way around.
We've said a lot of times this was the beginning of Taylor's acting career. This really was the beginning of Taylor's acting career. And I wish that it had ended here.
Yes. Because even as a young tot watching CSI on the television screen in my living room at my parents' house, I was like, so she's not an actress. And to me, it like wasn't even that big a deal. Like the gigs that she was getting, like in this sort of like 4 or 5 year period, you know, even like the movies, the couple of movies that she did, like I was like, oh, she's just like, this is just fun for her.
Exactly.
Like she's like, people asked her to do it and she was like, oh my gosh, that would be so cool, that'd be so fun, just kind of like doing stuff that she always wanted to do. So it wasn't that big of a deal to me that she wasn't that good of an actress, because I was like, well, you know what, if I was like a celebrity and not necessarily an actress and somebody was like, how would you like to have a guest starring role in one of your favorite TV shows, I'd be like, I'm gonna be there, bitch. So, like, it doesn't really matter. But it's just like, now I think that she takes it very seriously.
She's coming for that EGOT, the EGOT. She really wants to be an Oscar-winning actress. And I can tell you right now, at this moment, Taylor will never, ever have an Oscar, I would just like to say.
Maybe she should win a daytime Emmy or something. It's just not realistic.
This isn't what you were trained to do. You are a really good songwriter and a fantastic musician. You have astronomical success in this field. Please, why do you keep insisting on forcing us to see this? To conclude, Taylor is no actress. There is an interesting remix of You're Not Sorry, which is a song that she, again, like Permanent Marker, was a pop single that was never a single.
She fucking kept pushing it. I think that she wanted it to be like a hit, and it just wasn't. Even when she fucking remixed it, and the remix is one of the most boring things I've ever heard in my fucking life, by the way. It's just like, It's like somebody did it in 15 minutes in their mom's basement. It's just like, synth, all this time. Yeah, it's like there's no emotion in it anymore. It's just like, okay, here's my dead body. Synth. Yeah.
This whole appearance was a flop, I think we can say. It was a complete flop.
I will say it was a fun flop. Like, it was exciting at the time.
Yes.
I mean, I have seen that episode once. I'm telling you, one time, and it was the day that it aired. I have never watched it again, aside from in GIFs on Tumblr.com. But, I mean, it was fun.
If I could erase something from her timeline, this is not the thing I would choose, but it's not no. It's not good. It's funny in hindsight. It's funny. We can laugh about it now. So, also in this month, actually a little bit after this airs, only a few days, Taylor tweets Demi Lovato. Her single, Don't Forget, comes out, which is a very emotional song. This is, if I was gonna pick a song by Demi Lovato that I would say 2009 Taylor Swift really fucked with, this is the song I would pick.
Yep, 100%.
So she tweets Demi about that song, saying, I just watched your new video and started crying. It hit a nerve. This is one of the last public interactions she has with Demi, where she like acknowledges her on social media.
And like, how did Demi and Selena get along so well, and Taylor and Selena get along so well? Is it because Selena, to me, Selena is just sort of like, she's like an every person. She's just like, oh yeah, I'm like, I'm cute and I'm funny and I'm nice and people like me. So like, it doesn't really matter. But like, Taylor, you know what I mean? Like, she could get along with a lot
anyone.
Of people, I feel like. Yeah, you know what I mean? Not that she's like, you know, super amiable or super affable or super nice or anything. She's just like normal. She doesn't have like a huge personality. You know what I mean?
Whereas Demi is volatile and Taylor is neurotic. So those two personality types don't go together.
Yeah.
So then in April, we get probably the weirdest, a lot of weird shit happened this year. So in April, she performs her weirdest version of You're Not Sorry with a magician introducing her.
It doesn't make any fucking sense.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't fucking add up. Like, there's nothing. It makes me angry. Like, if I think about it for too long, I think about that poor 15-year-old girl sitting on the couch watching, like, oh, Taylor's up next, Taylor. And fucking David Copperfield comes out and puts her in a fucking box. Like,
and she just walks out and sings You're Not Sorry.
Wasn't even that. Like if it had been, like, a full performance, like, here's the magician. We're going to do, like, a whole fucking thing with it. Oh, there's flames. Oh, there's bunny rabbits. Like, something like that. No, she's just going to come out of a box. She couldn't even have done, like, Fearless. Like, that would have at least even been, like, kind of on theme.
God knows why. I don't know who told her.
Plugged it again and again. It's, I mean, is it because of Joe? Like, tell me, Taylor, tell me.
We should have got a music video for it. I don't even want one. I'm just saying we should have had one because how much she forced this down our necks.
She wanted us to think that this was her best song on the album.
Never have, never will.
No.
Won't accept anyone that says that's the best song on Fearless. Your ears are broken.
Yeah.
So she does that song. And she wins a milestone award from Reba for the most albums sold in 2009, which is pretty cool.
What we need to talk about is that she literally finished her performance, was sitting at the piano, and Reba got on the fucking mic and was like, Taylor, you come on down now. Taylor stood up performing You're Not Sorry after a magician introduced her and Reba McEntire standing there giving her an award. I just want everybody to know that. It is the weirdest performance that has ever happened, and I think about it literally all the fucking time.
It sounds like fan fiction.
Literally sounds like an AU meme.
It really happened. And she also won Album of the Year for Fearless, deserved, legend. And this is her first red carpet look where she kind of serves.
What's the look? Remind me. I saw
red dress, but... red dress and the updo, and there's the controversy about her nipple.
Yes! I love it! Yeah, so she's wearing this, like, it's this,
off the shoulder.
You can look it up if you want to see it. Off the shoulder, it has, like, a big, like, so it's, like, straight, it's an A-line, but then it, like, has this, like, big ruffle that comes around one of her shoulders, and it's, like, it might be kind of heavy. So in certain, when she, like, turns to the side and is, like, giving us that look, that side profile, like, she, you can kind of, like, see into the dress because, like, at this, like, I mean, she doesn't have the boobies. It looked like you could see into the dress, see her titty, see her nipple. And this was like fabric, a huge, people would like zoom in on it and be like, nip, nip. And I'd be like, you're telling me that Taylor Swift didn't think to put on nipple covers? I'm pretty sure she was at the bare minimum wearing a nipple. I have never seen Taylor Swift nipple. Not then. Not now, not ever. We're never going to see her nipple. Nobody's ever seen a nipple from Taylor.
No one. Not a single person in this world.
Not even like an I'm not wearing a bra and it's cold out nipple. Not even that. It's true, actually.
She really protects her nipples from us.
She doesn't want us to know. So the fact that anybody would think that she would expose her nipple in this fucking ridiculous gown, it just made me laugh. Even back then, I was like, you guys are fucking stupid.
So after this controversy, she attends the 17 Again premiere with Zac Efron. And she wears a white dress with a high collar, and it is not a serve. Please Google it. No, it's really not cute. It doesn't look good.
Doesn't she, like, fucking straighten her hair for that shit, too?
Yeah.
I feel like she remember her having straight hair.
She very, like, I don't know. She's spotty with her straight hair. It's like, I feel like she either is doing it because she can't be bothered, or she's doing it because she's really trying to serve. And at this time, it doesn't compute. We need the big hair.
Yeah, we need the big hair.
So probably my favorite part of the year, and yours too, the Fearless Tour kicks off on April 23rd of 2009. And this day,
bitch,
go off. And this day, it was such a big deal that Evansville, Indiana, the first date of the tour, declared it Taylor Swift Day and gave Taylor Swift a key to the city.
Yep, the mayor gave her a fucking key to the city. It was a great day for Taylor. And I remember there would be like cars driving around like at the time, like, honk if you love Taylor. Honk if you're going to see Taylor. You're like, wow. What a time to be in Evansville, Indy fucking Anna.
So Taylor Swift was sworn into Congress. So we got a few things. So starts are the tea parties, an iconic thing that has changed the way the fandom has behaved forever.
Absolutely.
We get an introduction video of different people talking about what being fearless means. And two of these people are Miley Cyrus and Demi Lovato.
Maybe she just wanted to have high profile people in there. So she was like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. She definitely prostituted herself for that. She was like, who wants to come in and talk about what being fearless means to you? Anyone? Anyone, please.
Anyone. My door is open. And she had fucking Lucas Till. Wasn't he talking about serving his country and he had his dog tags. That was so fucking weird and so fucking country.
Faith Hill also makes an appearance in this intro video. We can give or take. So I didn't get to see the Fearless Tour yet. I have to watch it all online, bootleg style, because I'm that bitch.
Yes, it was incredible. It was probably, I would call it, well, you know what? Now that I've been to so many Taylor shows that I can't even say what's with my second. Speak Now was my first. Fearless, I think, would maybe be tied with Reputation, honestly. And Red is in last place.
Really?
yeah.
Wow.
Didn't care for it. But that's that's a story for another day. I loved, I thought the set list was so good. And it was so good because it's not like she had to pick and choose from this fucking plethora.
All the bots and then a few of the cute girls.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can run through the set list real quick and point out all the standout performances. So we get You Belong With Me as an opener. Amazing opener.
When I tell you that my ass, when she rose up onto the platform and came for our asses in that fucking
band costume.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God.
And she did the quick change. Oh, it was just great. And then she goes into Our Song. Cute. We love it.
Very cute. That is one of my most cherished memories from my teenage years is being at the Fearless Tour and her inviting us all to sing the chorus of Our Song and everybody screaming it. Oh, it just lives in my memory. It's like, it makes me so happy every time I think about
it. It's such a happy song, really. That song is joyous. And I think she should play it on every tour because it really just, I don't know, it gets the whole room going.
Yeah.
Then we go into Tell Me Why. I think this is a good performance. And then we have Teardrops on My Guitar. We get a really good speech. She tells the story of Drew. She set a little desk and she stares opposite him. It's all very literal in this tour. Then we get Fearless. And I think that one of my favorite moments happened. Houston, Texas now. Capture it. Remember it.
Yeah.
That really is a good memory of mine. And then we have Forever and Always, a fucking serve of a performance.
That is probably my favorite one. The red, even just like the red dress alone.
Oh my God.
Is like, oh, serve me, queen. And she did.
It was fierce.
I had a clip on my iPod that was literally just the backup breakdown that she does. And she like extends it. She's like on her goddamn knees. It's like, I'm gonna fucking freak out. When she would hold hands with fans, do you know how badly I wanted that to be me? Every fucking day, I was like, why is that not me? Why is that not me?
I wanted that. I wanted the hat from State of Grace. There was a interlude video where a interviewer is asking Taylor questions, and they ask her something about pissing guys off. And she says,
if guys don't want me to write bad songs about them, then they shouldn't do bad things.
It's so good. And yeah, she rises up from under the stage, and the interview chairs are reenacted. She's like singing to the interviewer. She is getting so angry that she scares the interviewer off, and she picks up a fucking chair and she throws it off of the stage.
Yeah, and you know what's funny about that to me is that like you can tell that chair weighs probably like 3 pounds.
Yeah,
because it like she picks it up so easily, and she's all bone. Like, it makes me wonder how she even sat in it. It was so fucking light.
My skeleton queen. And then also there's a really funny video of her rolling when she's whipping her hair towards the end of the song. She puts her hand out and one lucky fan, or several lucky fans, get to cling onto her hand during this moment of intense emotion. I'm fucking jealous of those girls.
They can go fuck themselves, in my opinion, like bullshit. Most of them probably didn't even deserve it, and you know it.
Yeah, most of them came in pink cowboy hats. Some were like, when is she gonna play Love Story?
Yeah.
Then she does 15 and Tim McGraw, so all in this B stage. And White Horse too, or does she go back to the main stage for White Horse?
I feel like I remember White Horse being a B stage song.
I remember that very vividly. She only did White Horse on the main stage when John Mayer came out, which we will get into next year. So she does White Horse, and then she does Love Story. I found it interesting that she didn't close with Love Story. I think she forgot that this was like the big smash of the time because she was too busy pushing You're Not Sorry.
Yep. And did she even play You're Not Sorry on tour?
She did.
Yes. She mashed it up. Okay. Oh my God. I completely forgot about that.
The whole set turns into a castle. Another quick change into a white dress. It's cute.
Then we get a fairly standard issue performance of The Way I Loved You.
Then she does You're Not Sorry with What Goes Around Comes Around. Very dramatic.
That existed because out of all the songs that, because I had a bootleg rip of the tour too, just for the MP3s, you know. Probably the one that I listened to the most was that mashup, because I thought it went the fuck off.
It did. And I mean, of all her mashups, it's not my favorite, but it was pretty good. I like the idea of interpolating like someone else's song with the song that she's doing. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and I kind of miss when she would do that. Where's the tea now? You know, yeah, but I say that, and I spoke too soon, because she really forced me to sit there, and actually she didn't, because she took it off the set list before I ever got to go, but she forced me to sit there and listen to Stay, 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 mashed up with Kohei. You know how much I fucking hate Kohei? Do you know how much I hate that fucking song? Maybe it's best, because
I hate Stay, Stay, Stay.
That's a differing opinion on that one, but we won't get into that now.
Then she does Picture to Burn, and she serves. She really does serve.
God, I fucking went to town. I love Picture to Burn live. It's so much fun.
She again served us Homophobia on a silver platter.
This will always be her homophobic, served on a silver platter, Westboro Baptist Church tea that she will give us until she stops playing this song, which she has done already.
Yep.
And then she sings Change, which she thinks is a serve, but I don't think so.
So the thing about this particular song, the performance of it, I saw this. This is what I got. Halfway through the tour, she cuts it and does Today Was a Fairy Tale. And if you ask me which one I would prefer to have, Change a million times over.
Oh, I would pick Today Was a Fairy Tale 100 times over.
Are you joking? My butt crack. Are you kidding me?
I think it's such a good song.
You're so Jack, shocked. What the fuck? Nobody likes that song. Do you guys Hello.
Okay, I also like Girl at Home, which no one likes.
What the fuck? Since when do you like Girl at Home?
Quiet about it.
I can't even address these issues with you right now. I don't even know where to start. I'm just going to say change happened on the Fearless Tour, and I thought it was okay.
I preferred Today Was a Fairy Tale, but I think I might get murdered if I say that again. so she pretends to leave the stage, and she comes back for her encore. And originally it was I'm Only Me When I'm With You, and she performs it
with Kelly Pickler and Gloriana.
We could have lived without that.
I don't understand why
that from the debut was another song she tacked on. I guess it was cute. And then she
It was okay.
She finishes with Should Have Said No, which was just iconic.
Yeah, that is, I mean, Love Story probably should have been the closer, but Should Have Said No as a closer, like, worked. You know
it
I mean?
Worked
like
it was... as a closer. I'm still confused as to why she picked that song, because it definitely wasn't even the biggest hit off of the debut.
It was so good with the rain coming down and the nose and she's slamming the guitar and it's all very dramatic.
I think that it might not have been her biggest song, but I think that she knew that it was her biggest performance idea. Like, she knew that she could make this as big as possible, this performance. So yes. She was like, okay, well, I'll have it be the closer.
She knew that she could serve us well, feed us well. And she did it.
So she did. She did it.
So that concludes the Fearless Tour. And overall, I thought it was a really cohesive, really solid first tour. And it was a big production for a first tour.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I mean, I just thought that her ideas were so good.
And also this tour just seemed to go on for fucking ever.
Right? She did not stop touring. Like, she added legs, didn't she?
Yeah, she added a whole other U.S. leg, which she's never done since. She added, like, she started out, she did, like, 34 dates, and then she added another, like, 40 or 50 dates.
It's so funny to me that she did that, because she immediately was releasing Speak Now after finishing touring. Like, she was off for, like, I think the summer. And then all of a sudden she was like, hey guys, Speak Now,
I'm
my
back.
Album, October 25th.
Mine leaks and we're all like, what?
Yeah.
During the tour, so the rest of the timeline that we're going to go through
is pretty much all while she's still touring.
So she manages to do all of this stuff in between tour dates, which is insane because she was so fucking busy this year. Her stamina is just unreal. In May, she hops over to the UK to do some more promo. We had a few interviews that are boring and performances of Love Story and Teardrops on My Guitar.
So internationally, I can really speak to this and say that
people didn't really know about the debut. The debut was on the international version of Fearless, repackaged. So they added Should Have Said No, Our Song, Teardrops, and Tim McGraw. Not even Tim McGraw. They added those three songs onto Fearless and then sold that. The debut wasn't even available for me in Singapore. I couldn't get the debut until 2011. I had to order it online. I couldn't get it in stores. We were only really aware, if you weren't like a fan like me, you were only aware that she had one album.
That was very interesting. Okay.
And then on May 2nd, we get the You Belong With Me music video.
Oh, did that? Oh, shit. Did I skip that? I thought that happened in 2010.
Oh, you did. I went through and added shit back in.
Okay. I was like, oh, shit. That happened. Shit. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It was so good. One of my favorite Taylor videos, really. So good.
Yes, it was one of my favorite ones. I would say that it's been knocked out of top five by a couple other ones. But it's still, I mean, I watched it like again and again and a fucking again.
Yes, I know that video there, like frame by frame.
Yeah, frame by fucking frame. I would sit there watching country music channels just to see if You Belong With Me would come on.
Just such a cute video. It's like a little romantic comedy in a 3-minute video. It's so cute. This is, I think, her highest charting single ever at this stage. It hits number 2 on the Hot 100, obviously number 1 on the country charts. It is a worldwide commercial smash. It actually, like,
it outperformed Love Story, which I thought was really interesting at the time.
But You Belong With Me, really, the song was everywhere. This is just really what made Taylor, like, more of a household name. Everybody watched the video. Yeah. Everybody knew the song. It was that bitch at the time. And Lucas Hill was in the video, too. I guess he was there.
He was definitely there. That was in between his shifts at the Navy or wherever he was.
And on the Hannah Montana set.
Yeah.
Lucas Till was kind of like the it boy of the time. He was the white boy of the year, if you will.
I don't remember that being the thing? He wasn't my white boy of the year. I don't know who I was talking about. Probably still Robert Pattinson, honestly, at this time. But I don't know. I just thought it's probably because I'm not, and it's so fucking funny that I'm about to say this. I've never been attracted to blonde men. It's so fucking funny because my fucking boyfriend is.
Yes, he is.
Like but Lucas Till is like blonde, you know what I mean? Or like Tom Felton, or what's his fucking name? I think that's his name. Draco in Harry Potter. I don't find him attractive. Some people do. It's just the really, really blonde. And just like the all-American boy look, I'm like, ugh, kill me.
He looks like if I met him, he would commit a hate crime. That's how I like to think of him.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely looks like he wears cowboy boots and his fucking Ace Hardware hat. Yep. And goes to the bar and calls his friends the F word. Yep. Because... they like
stupid.
Yeah. yep.
And he like has chewing tobacco in his pocket. Like we know what kind of guy he is. I think we can unanimously agree that the You Belong With Me was such an iconic part of her discography, her music videography. It was just a moment and it is referenced to this day, I would say. It is a visual that is associated with her
all the time. If you look at any article that has like a GIF or a still or a clip from this video, it really has outlasted itself.
It really did. Yeah, it served us. It served a purpose. It did.
It served in the trenches.
In more ways than one, it served.
So then we get, and I'm glad that you pointed this out, the iconic, amazing cover of Run by George Strait.
My god, one of her best covers.
It is literally I would listen to this watching the performance. I just thought it was so fucking good, and probably one of the reasons why I initially became so obsessed with it is because her vocal performance is so fucking good
for this and time. It's good.
Yeah, and it's like good enough that's like, okay, this was pre-recorded, but it's like even if they did sound editing, they couldn't have done it this well, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like if she was pitchy, it would have come through. Like she sounds so fucking good. It's like I don't know how, and she sounds good. She does three performances for this specific show where she's like everybody covers songs by a specific artist, and all three times her vocal performance is so fucking good. It's like, what about this show like brings out the best of you? Is it because you're among like friends? Like what is it? I don't know. Anyway, it's not the point. This specific cover is incredible. I'm obsessed with it. I love it to this day.
I think Taylor will always be most comfortable with country music. Always going to be her home. And watching this video today reminded me that she knows how to sing a country song. She really does. Like she just, it's in her blood at this stage. So I would love for a return to form with this kind of music, these kinds of covers. I really loved this performance. She's wearing a cute headband, which was a thing for her at the time. She loved her sparkly headbands. And yeah, just a stellar performance. And George Strait himself was kind of like, okay, you served.
All right, thank you, Queen. I mean, he's just sitting there like old man, like with his hat on, just like nodding along, like, yep. The old man version of getting served right there.
Yes, it is. So she nailed that. We loved it. We should point out that the vocals at this time were so spotty. And that was a really big critique of her at the time, was that she couldn't sing. Everyone was like, her songs are good, but she can't sing live. Have you ever heard her sing? She sucks. So
have you ever seen her sing live before? And this was like a huge thing for me at the time. People would be like at school, some would be like, oh, you
she's
know,
good, but she sucks live.
She can't sing live. And I would have this like list. I had one, a list of performances that I would send them on YouTube. That would be like, tell me she can't fucking sing now.
Was it?
And
like,
one of them was Run. And then another one was Untouchable Acoustic that she did. Back in 2008, yeah.
So then on May 29th, we get, I think, her first Today Show performance, which was cute. She was in her blue dress and her white cowboy boots. Cute. The vocals were okay. I don't expect much from her at these early morning shows. Like, who can sing in the morning? I don't think anybody. Well, so she does.
Yeah.
She does Love Story, You Belong With Me, Teardrops, and Our Song.
I loved, I'm just going to say this on the same wavelength. I loved those sparkly dresses that she had. They were so simple. They were literally just, she had a dozen of them, just like
one in every color.
A-line thick spaghetti strap sparkly dress, and she had them in like 12 different colors. She even had a blue one, two different blue ones. The blue one she's wearing in that performance is not the same one that she wore on tour a little bit. It's a different one. So she just had tons of them. I loved it. I loved the look. It was so easy because she would just like put it on and instantly she was cute. And it was like such a comfortable thing for her to be wearing, probably.
This was like her uniform at the time. Like that was a very Taylor thing. Like the sparkly dresses and the like.
I loved it.
If she came out with a line of those dresses, now that miser.
Oh my God, I would have snapped on those
every
dresses,
single one.
Unfortunately, I don't look very good in a dress like that because if she looks good, it's like a bag on me. So like, I look like a sack of potatoes, but she's super, super skinny and tall. So it looks really good on her. I'd look like a dumbass, but I'd still fucking wear it. I would.
Buy all of them, every color.
We do have a moment coming up after this. However, we have Taylor attending the Hannah Montana movie premiere.
Okay, so there's a picture that Madeline...
There's an image.
There's an image. And I didn't believe that it was real. And then I Googled it and I was like, what?
It is almost like entering the Twilight Zone. So we have linking arms walking. Demi Lovato, Taylor Swift, Emily Osment. And for the record, these three women are in full regalia. They're dressed up.
Yes.
Beautiful dress, beautiful hair, beautiful makeup. We look over and there's Miley Cyrus. I don't understand. She was, because she's wearing a real outfit at the actual premiere.
Yes.
But I think they were going to dinner beforehand. And Miley, I shit you not, to go to dinner before the premiere of her movie.
Her own movie.
She is wearing a naked face, hair that looks like she just woke up, a pair of fucking sweatpants, a long camisole, and a sweater.
And Uggs. Don't forget the Uggs.
And Uggs.
Follow us at T Swift Podcast, and you can see this image. It's real. It takes a little digging to find, but it exists.
Yeah.
And it just, everyone looks so normal. Like, they all look like this is a normal day for them.
Yeah, right? Oh, we're just hanging out. We're just being girls. Girls being girls. And this guy that Miley's having sex with, maybe. I think.
So all the other girlies are in their attire, their great gowns, and Miley is looking like a crackhead. Let's be honest. She looks like a crackhead.
She literally looks like Lindsay Lohan's breakdown. That's what she looks like. That's how I'll put it.
It's bad.
Yeah.
But we'll tweet it. So for this movie, Taylor is in it. If you haven't seen it, you're not missing much. She just stands there and lip syncs Crazier, which is a song that comes out. I am not crazy about this song.
It's kind of on and off for me. Like, this would not even be top 10. It would not even be top 20. It wouldn't even be top 30 Taylor Swift songs.
It's
a cute girl. It is a cute girl. I definitely went through a period of time where I really liked it. But it doesn't serve. It just kind
of
is.
I understand that Taylor didn't want to give one of her really great songs to the movie. I get that. She had to give them something that was a little... It doesn't really matter if she keeps it or throws it away.
Do you think that this was a song that she already had written? Like, she, like, pulled it out of, like...
For sure.
She went on dbt.com and was like, okay, what the fuck, like, can I give
what
these
can
bitches?
I do? They don't want sweet tea in God's graces. And also, to note, she wrote the song You'll Always Find Your Way Back Home on the soundtrack, which is a bop.
Yes, she did write that song, and I always forget about that. I can honestly say that I've listened to that song maybe, like, three times.
So catchy, but... and it sounds like Taylor. If you listen to, like, the melody and the lyrics, it sounds like Taylor wrote it. Her and Demi appear to be on good terms. They take a lot of pictures together. Taylor also takes a lot of pictures with Miley. It's just a promo moment. That's what it is. So then in June, we also have the CMT Awards, and Taylor wins Entertainer of the Year. She cries, serves us. She looks amazing. She really looks good. And then she performs You Belong With Me very literally, as in she acts out every little thing. When she says laughing on a park bench, she sits on a park bench. It's a good performance. It is one of the better performances that
she
did this year.
It's very cute. I like it a lot. I love that when she's wearing the puffy robe. And she has little glasses on.
So her award show speech is cute. Her dress is cute. I really like the dress at this time.
Yeah.
And then also she forces us to hear her sing with Def Leppard, which, as we all know, I hate.
I know. It's Zach's absolute favorite. It's the only reason I even mentioned it is because, like, Zach's going to love it.
I hated it.
I forgot it happened, honestly.
Me too. Until you mentioned it. I was like, I thought they were dead. And I thought they were gone. We also get something that would not fly today and is actually super problematic in hindsight, Thug Story.
Yes. So it's funny because I've actually never heard anybody dig that up and be like, this is problematic. And
thank
I think
God.
The main thing that's the reason that she gets away with it is because, like, she's not, like, really trying to rap. Like, everybody knows.
Yeah, it's satirical. That,
like, she's not making fun of rap music, and she's not making fun of any community. She's making fun of herself.
Yes.
And it comes across so obvious. Like, you know what I mean? That it's like, you could maybe spin it to be like, this is problematic. She, you know, like, dressed up like a black person, I guess, and blah, blah, blah. But she, like, didn't really. She put on camel pants and a white shirt, and T-Pain lent her a pair of grills.
And also, it was kind of funny. I'm 8'4", blonde hair to the floor. That's like...
Yeah, it was a good thing that happened. And it's, like, crazy to me, of all the people that she got T-Pain, which I'm not even roasting. Like, it's, if it had been, like, anybody else, it wouldn't have been as funny. But because it was T-fucking-Pain.
It was funny, actually, now that I think about it. This isn't, like, cringe. This is, like, Taylor actually being funny. Like, she's acting, but she's being funny. Unfortunately, this is something that the Swifties still reference. I see this on my Tumblr from time to time. And I'm like, every time you post about it in 2019, it gets less funny. So please, let it go. Like,
let it free. Yeah, sit in silence and be quiet. I remember fucking sitting there watching it and being shook to my bones.
It was confusing at the time also. It was very weird. East Whistle starts here, and press, media, critics continue to call her T-Swizzle to this day. So that really caught on.
It really did, which is crazy to me. Because it's like, she obviously was just like, ha ha, T-Swizzle, that's so fucking stupid. And like wrote it down and was like, oh, that's gonna be so funny. And then people took it seriously. I wonder if she ever gets annoyed. She's like, stop calling me that. Do you know what actually of the nicknames that the press and the media call her? One thing that I hate is Swifty. I hate Swifty. I cannot stand it. T-Swift is fine. T-Swizzle, I'll accept. Swifty, get out of my life. I do not want to hear the term Swifty.
Just when anyone refers to themselves as a Swifty or calls us Swifties, I get triggered. It's traumatizing for me. I don't know about you, but I'm not a fucking Swifty.
But I think it's like the main reason that like you or I don't really have that sort of like Swifty thing is because I think that Swifty started becoming a thing like in like 2011, 2012.
When people started naming their fan bases long after we'd been.
Yeah, like a Belieber, being a Belieber and a Selenator and a what was it for Miley?
Smilers.
Smilers. Oh, God, that's even worse. The reason is because Lady Gaga decided to log on. and say little monsters, and so everybody else had to like come up with some little fucking thing. Anyway, and Nicki Minaj too. Barbies,
Barbs,
you know.
My Barb. Yeah, they all have weird names. I think Arianator is probably the worst one I've heard.
So after this, we get Taylor's performance at the CMA festival.
She fed us. Her vocals were so good. The performance was so good. I loved these performances at the time. I watched them again and again and again.
15 is so good.
It's probably her best one.
She plays the 12-string guitar.
It's the talent jumped out.
Yeah, the talent literally leaped out of her fucking body.
She has the white microphone. We love that.
I love the white microphone from the Fearless era. I wish that she would resurrect it.
So in July of that year, she begins filming Valentine's Day and is seen for the first time with Taylor Lautner.
Yay! This is like my favorite young Taylor relationship.
I was a Taylor Squared stan. I thought it was the cutest thing. It was the least drama. It was cute. It was really cute.
And like, even after they ended, like it was the main relationship. It was the only one where it didn't end badly on his end. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't break up with her. She broke up with him. And like, he didn't hurt her. She hurt him. And
to this day, we don't know why. All we know is back to December. That's all we got.
And like, in a lot of ways, it's like, I'm kind of happy that I don't know everything. Because it's like, I did like to imagine it back then, back when I was like a huge stan. And this was all I fucking thought about. But anyway, the point is that I absolutely love this relationship. It was so fun to like, at the time, I used to compare because this is sort of like off. It's on topic, but off topic. Taylor Lautner, like, went out of his way to, like, go to Taylor's birthday party at the time. And this was literally, I mean, back to December. This was, like, right before they broke up. And he was, like, going out of his fucking way to, like, come to her birthday. and like buy her a present and like be there. And who
Buddy did not come to Taylor's birthday party. Does anybody know who it was?
But he does. He goes to her birthday party. He's dedicated to her. And my theory on this is that it was just a young love that fizzled out. It just burnt out. She lost interest. I think she loves a game.
My main thing is that what I think is that I think that he was way too fucking nice.
Yeah.
And that's boring, like, to an extent. It sounds terrible to say. Like, I don't mean to say that, like, when you're in an actual good, healthy relationship, it's boring. That's not what I mean. Being in a good, healthy relationship is a great thing. It's not boring. But there is such a thing as being a boring person.
Yes.
Like, it has to be interesting. They have to be different from you. They have to not have the same fucking name.
I mean, if we're talking about boys, she learned her fucking lesson in 2010, didn't she?
Oh, my God. She did. Just learned a fucking lesson.
Yeah, I think she only got sad about this in hindsight and felt bad about when she was burned by someone else. And she was like, oh shit, I hurt someone. I've never felt that emotion before. Usually I'm the bitch getting dumped. Also, there are some conspiracy theories that this was a PR relationship. And I really go back and forth between wanting to believe that every single relationship Taylor Swift has been in has been a real relationship. But realistically, I do think there is a possibility that some of these relationships were not entirely based off of them loving each other and wanting to date each other and being interested in each other. I think this could have been one of those things, as in they were shooting a movie together. It was good promo for the movie. It was good buzz. You notice sometimes when Taylor has a project coming up, she'll get into a high profile relationship. It happens. So I don't know if I believe this, but you know
what the thing is, the thing about it that I would like to say is that I would believe that she would have a PR relationship. And I guess you could make the argument that because there's only one song about him, that could be, oh, well, she only wrote one song about him, so it's a PR relationship. In my opinion, if she was going to do a PR relationship, she would never, ever, ever, ever do a fucking Back to December where she accuses herself of doing something shitty. Just yes. For PR. Like, I don't think that's in her repertoire. So I think I could go back and forth on it, too. There's a lot of variables to it. But I think that it was an actual relationship, and it was just not a very interesting one for her. I think Today was a fairy tale. I mean, it was for the Valentine's Day movie, so that's the only reason I think about it. But I think that song is about him.
For sure.
The reason that I think that is because it is such a fucking boring song. Of course,
stop.
It's not her most boring relationship.
I hate you.
And I'm saying this as a Taylor Squared stan. I have fucking conspiracy theories about other songs being about Taylor Lautner. Everybody else,
but you know there's not. You know there aren't.
I know that there are other songs about him, and I can prove it.
I think you're going to be doing some major reaching.
Me and find out. I debunk everything.
The generally accepted timeline of this relationship is August to December. It was short-lived. We all know it ended in December. That's no secret to any of us. We have to do a lot of guessing with Taylor's relationships because she becomes more private with them as she realizes how much being public fucks with them. This is when she starts to bring pizza to fans outside of her hotels, which is cute. She would never do that now.
No, never in a million years.
I really do think she's scared of us now. She knows we're fucking crazy.
The second that she logged on to Tumblr.com, I think that if she became hyper aware of the fact that some people are fucking psychopaths.
Yeah, she didn't know before.
She innocently believed that we were all good people.
I can't wait to get into the Tumblr drama. But we had a good few peaceful years. And then she ruined it. Taylor Swift ruined Tumblr. I'm just saying it. In August 2009, Taylor begins her friendship with one Miss Katy Perry. They go out to dinner and they tweet each other very nicely a few times. And this is weird in hindsight.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I wonder how Katy Perry, it's in my head whenever I think of her, and I do not mean this in a shady way at all. Whenever I would think about this, like, friendship that she had with Katy Perry, I remember thinking when I was a kid, I was like, isn't Katy Perry, like, a lot older than her? But, I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. I just found it interesting at the time. I found it interesting that Taylor, I remember she tweeted one, it was Waking Up in Vegas. It was like, I love that song, Taylor said. She was like, I love Waking Up in Vegas. I love Waking Up in Vegas. Well, what the fuck do you know about that, Taylor? What the fuck do you know? You've never even had a sip of beer, according to your Rolling Stone article, you fake bitch. So it's like, what are you talking about?
Katy Perry and Taylor have an interesting relationship. I remember at the time thinking that Katy Perry was using Taylor Swift for promo. I thought that. I was like, this washed up flop with one hit is clinging to the legendary Taylor Swift.
I guess this was before Teenage Dream came out, wasn't it?
Yes.
I guess you could have said that about her at the time. Yeah.
I did say it.
I said
and
it.
I could, and I did.
She also goes to the UK around this time to do some promo V Festival music performances, and I just hate watching the videos back. Like, they're so awkward. It's so bad.
Remind me, what's she wearing?
She's wearing a black dress with, like, a glitter collar.
Yep. Okay. I know exactly what you're talking about.
There's a video of Forever and Always, and there's a video of Love Story. And I was just kind of like, why are you playing Forever and Always at a festival? Like, people don't want to hear that. But I guess she didn't have enough hits to pad it out with all the hits.
Yeah, I guess so.
Internationally, again, Taylor was really, like, a U.S.-based. That was her biggest market.
And that's totally fair. Like, for your first two albums, like, I mean, if they're not, like, huge, gigantic, pop, mega, superstar. Like, if it's not, like, fucking Adele's 25 or something. Yeah. Like, the UK is not going to know what the fuck you're talking about.
And also, country music was, like, a really niche market.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you can't just go to Australia or wherever the fuck she was and start talking about cowboy boots.
If you're interested to see Taylor struggling to command a crowd, this doesn't happen very often because I think that she usually plays to audiences that are pretty wrapped for her. But yeah, the audience is not into it. The crowd is small. There's people drinking, which I'm sure she didn't like. And she made some comment in an interview about how she didn't like performing at festivals after this. And she didn't perform at another festival in the UK for another 7 years.
She was like, learn my lesson.
So on August 30th, 2009, very close to the VMAs, D-Day, Taylor releases 15 as a single.
Did the video come out at this point?
Yes, and it is the worst video ever.
It is definitely in the bottom two.
What's the other one?
I'll think about it and I'll get back to you on that one, because there's definitely one that I hate more.
Is it Delicate? I hate that music video.
Ready for it.
Oh, it's yeah.
Let me take my 30 seconds to say this out of context. The reason that I hate the Ready For It music video isn't even because it's that awful. It's because it is my favorite song and she could have done a lot with it. So back to 15. It is my second least favorite music video.
The saving grace of this scenario really is that 15 was acclaimed by critics. They really loved it.
Way better received than You Belong With Me. They cite her songwriting and her storytelling as really powerful. They're right.
Abigail is in the video.
And as we said before, she never spoke again after the Picture to Burn music video. So Taylor knew
she was never invited to have a line. She was handed the script and it said, sit there and look sad. And she did it.
Yep.
She also couldn't not have Abigail in this music video.
She's mentioned by name.
She's mentioned. She has to be in it. So they put her in it. But let's talk about Roman White as a director in this particular era, because he did You Belong With Me and he did he did 15. And those were the only two music videos aside from Love Story, which was directed by her debut album. It's like Trey Fanjoy, I think is her name. She did Love Story too. But the only two other videos that she had that were, like, directed by somebody, not Fearless, which was a tour video, that was by Roman White. And it's like, you look at You Belong With Me, which is such a good fucking video, and then you look at 15. It's like, why did you do that?
Did you make this on Windows Movie Maker, and was the budget $2?
It had to have been. The only part about this music video that I like is when it's the end of the video and she's like standing there and it's like raining and she like looks over and she sees like these like 15-year-old girls like about to go into high school.
Yeah.
It's like that to me is like, I wish that the video would have been about like her in a high school at like 6 o'clock in the morning in September before the first day of school, just like walking through the hallways. And then like all of a sudden the girls are like coming into school and she's like, take a deep breath, girl.
Yeah,
like,
that would be
cute. I would have cried my eyes out.
She ruined it with all these fucking CGI butterflies and fake grass.
For some reason, I got leaves. There are fucking CGI leaves.
Also,
I don't know why.
I think CGI is probably a really high praise for what that shit was. It was like, it was stock footage.
It was just a fucking green screen. And the thing about it is that, like, I want to know, like, the round table discussion that occurred where they're brainstorming ideas and somebody fucking said, I know, let's make the worst thing that we can possibly fucking make. Let's make it look like a teenage girl actually did make it for her fucking intro to filmmaking class, and let's do that. So it's like, okay.
And Taylor said, okay.
Let me make sure that it never becomes a hit, because in my opinion, this is like, I know that this is a controversial thought, but if in my opinion, if the video had been even a little bit better, I think it would have charted a lot fucking more better.
Yeah, more better.
The song itself didn't flop so bad. It was a moderate success. It reached number 23 on the Hot 100, which was still lower than You Belong With Me and Love Story.
But it's a ballad, so I guess that's to be expected. It didn't even break the top five on the country charts. And this is a country song. So you could say that 15 was overshadowed by September 13th, 2009. The shot heard around the world. The VMAs.
And that is where we're going to stop for today, because this is getting really long.
Stay tuned for the next episode, where we talk about what happened at the VMAs most notably, and a couple of other things as well.
You don't want to miss it, really. It's the tea.
You do not want to miss it, because it is the steaming hot tea. If you're listening on Spotify, make sure that you're following us.
And if you're listening on Apple Music, I don't think you should wait. I think you should subscribe now.